Picture a man in his 40s standing in a Chicago queer bar, indignant because a woman declined his invitation to dance. His complaint? He's not allowed to dance. When someone suggests he could, you know, just dance without grabbing strangers, he asks for backup if something goes wrong. This absurd scene perfectly captures our current moment, where men mistake being asked to respect boundaries for being stripped of basic freedoms. They cry witch hunt whenever held accountable, co-opting language from an era when tens of thousands were tortured and burned alive. But here's the twist. What if the witches really are coming? Not with pitchforks and flames, but armed with something far more dangerous. Truth. This cultural reckoning isn't about revenge. It's about finally naming what's been hidden in plain sight for generations. Why has there never been an Adam Sandler for girls? After watching 8 Sandler films, the formula became clear. He plays a loser who's secretly the best, talks in funny voices, has anger issues that somehow benefit him, and despite being deeply unappealing, always gets the beautiful woman. In Big Daddy, he kidnaps a child and teaches him to urinate on buildings. In That's My Boy, statutory rape becomes comedy. These aren't just bad movies, they're cultural blueprints teaching us that women exist as prizes for male growth, that female sexuality deserves shame while male dysfunction earns applause. White men failing upward has become so normalized, it warps our sense of quality itself. If Ellen Cleghorn had made something as terrible as Little Nicky, would she have gotten 77 more chances? The real tragedy isn't these films existing, it's the emptiness around them. Straight white boys got their abundance. The rest of us got reflected glow. Ted Bundy wasn't particularly charismatic. Billy McFarland, the Fyre Festival con artist, is an obvious fool who still conned good people. Both are more charming than Donald Trump, yet he became the most powerful man on earth. America's bootstrap mythology conditions us to cheer deregulation and beg for the removal of consumer protections. We're literally asking to be conned. Institutional benefit of the doubt is monstrously powerful, turning lies into truth through repetition. When Judge Edward Cowart sentenced Bundy to death, he praised him. "You'd have made a good lawyer." I wonder how many of Bundy's victims would have made good lawyers. Witch is what we call a woman who demands that same benefit of the doubt, who punctures the con, who refuses to play likable. Because likability in a sexist culture isn't objective. It's compulsory femininity, invisible labor, smallness, sweetness. Power in women will never be likable. Growing up, I didn't resist shallow representations of women on screen. I took notes. Makeover shows taught me I was ugly. Romantic comedies taught me stalking means love. Disney movies taught me if I made my waist small enough, a man might marry me. The Smurfs taught me boys can have 78 possible personalities, while girls get one, high heels. The Breakfast Club taught me male rage signals allure, not abuse. In Revenge of the Nerds, the heroes install hidden cameras in women's bathrooms and commit sexual assault by deception. And we're supposed to root for them? Remember Fat Monica? I need a separate therapist just for Fat Monica. 2 years after Weinstein's fall, Hollywood still dictates how people should look, talk, and exist. Victoria's Secret won't feature trans or fat models because it's selling a fantasy, as if thin people are the only aspiration. What we need is about 100 years of phase cancellation. Not neutrality, but new work that actively challenges old assumptions. Unseating powerful abusers is a start, but not an end unless we radically change the power structure itself. The solution? You do it. Whatever your sphere, make choices within it. Be a demon about diversity and never let anyone sleep. At Gwyneth Paltrow's In Goop Health Expo in Culver City, tickets cost $500 to $1,500, with color-coded bracelets marking your tier. Higher prices bought access to sound baths or lunch with GP herself. The venue featured a resident shaman, aura photography, oxygen bars, and IV drips. The marketplace sold the infamous $55 jade eggs Goop suggested women insert vaginally. Years earlier, I'd tested Paltrow's diet book, spending $300 on 3 days' groceries, a disaster involving wet almonds, exploded soup, and an avocado smoothie that could give diarrhea an existential crisis. Most recipes were delicious, but required hours of daily chopping and cleaning, practical only for people with flexible schedules, disposable income, and household help. The expo was shockingly white, maybe 10 people of color among hundreds, and panels avoided politics entirely. You can't honestly address wellness without addressing poverty, racism, healthcare access, and reproductive rights, unless you're only talking about people who are already disproportionately well. South Park premiered when I was a freshman in high school. So outrageous, my husband wasn't allowed to watch it. Now creators Trey Parker and Matt Stone are middle-aged millionaire dads, yet we still treat them as counterculture vanguard. For decades, they've positioned themselves as the only reasonable men standing against both right and left, insisting both sides are equally stupid. They've created a neat trap. Criticize the show and you're just a moral scold. The only acceptable position is nihilistic detachment. But both sides are not equally bad. This false equivalence has become extinction-level dangerous, especially regarding climate change. When Republicans separate children from parents at the border and call for a return to coal while we have perhaps 30 years before there's no more ice, smirking at liberals for being social justice warriors crosses from contrarianism into psychopathy. Their South Park Republicanism spawned a proto-alt-right movement of young white men who felt bullied by liberals and fought back with irreverence and vicious stereotyping. While liberals are imperfect, Republicans literally want to strip healthcare, suppress wages, expand gun access, cage refugees, force unwanted births, roll back LGBTQ rights, and extract every last resource until everything burns. There is no cool version of conservatism. To conserve inherently means embracing stasis because the current system benefits certain people very well. When adapting my memoir for Hulu, I insisted the pilot show Annie getting an abortion from casual sex simply because she doesn't want to be pregnant. Wanting an abortion is the same as needing one. My real abortion was similar, except I went alone, something I might have done differently with better representation. In 2015, when my friend Amelia posted about her abortion on Facebook, writing, "Having an abortion made me happy in a totally unqualified way," I shared it with hashtag ShoutYourAbortion. The hashtag exploded globally with stories of freedom from shame, illegal procedures, late-term abortions for non-viable pregnancies, and transgender experiences. We must stop arguing about extreme cases when abortion restrictions of any kind represent total disenfranchisement. Climate change has transformed my beloved Pacific Northwest. Summers now bring choking smoke. I've sobbed reading we've missed the window to prevent climate collapse. But despair is the death of action. The world is beautiful and worth saving through daily civic engagement. The hardest truth isn't that this cultural moment is a finish line, it's that there may be no finish line at all. Maybe we will fight forever. But I live in the America that won, with art, empathy, free press, and fierce protest. The witches are coming, not for your life, but for your lies, your legacy, and our future. This time, we're not backing down.